Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
And now, Cityscape Productions presents All Things Jacksonville. The city, its people, and you. Here's your host, Bruce Arns.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second edition of All Things Jacksonville, your city, its people, and you. I am your host, Bruce Arms, and it's fantastic to have you with us today. Thanks for listening. Today's show is brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealers and Safari Truck of Jacksonville. So, what is All Things Jacksonville? Well, I can't say it any better than I did last week, and I'm not going to try because it was perfect timing on the music. So, roll it. What is All Things Jacksonville? Well, let's break it down. All is the greatest possible amount of a quality or quantity and can't really even be defined without the second word, thing or things. So, all is the entire group of a thing, the entire amount of that group or thing. So, are you with me so far? Good. And Jacksonville is the group in that definition. Still with me? Hang in there. All things Jacksonville is actually a self-defining phrase. It's the greatest amount of the quality or quantity of our city, the place where we live, the place where we work, the place we call home. All things simply means that everything about your city and my town is in play on this show. Hence the subtitle, Your City, Its People, and You. And perhaps the most important word in that subtitle is you. Because without you, there's no anything Jacksonville. And we're going to talk to you. Whether you're listening on your radio or a guest in the studio or on a podcast, it's all about you. You are the people, you are the place, you are the city of Jacksonville. You are all things Jacksonville. What's important to you? What's important to me? Because after all, I am one of you. We're going to talk about our history. We're going to talk about the preservation of that history. We're going to talk about business. We're going to talk about current events and relative political issues. And most important, we're going to talk about the people and places in our community that make up the history, businesses, events, and issues. I'm not an expert, but I'm a lifelong resident of this great city, and I'm a student of its history. I love where I live, and the town is my teacher. All Things Jacksonville is a long and never-ending story about what has become a very large group of people. But it's a great story, a great read, and we hope a great listen. For example, Jacksonville has a grand musical history, and is full of talented people in that arena, and we want you to participate each and every week. The show has three segment intros that we want to fill with your voices, your instrumentals, and your bands. I'll tell you how to get involved a little later in the show. We also want to hear from you about what you want to hear from us. If you've got a story, a family history, a unique character in that family, send it our way and just maybe we'll get a chance to share it with everybody. We're glad you're listening today, and we hope you'll listen every week. And we hope you'll tell your friends about it, because after all, and there's that word again, all. It's all about you, Jacksonville. All about you. And there you have it.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine.
If you watched any national or local TV in the last few days, it would have been hard not to notice that this week was the 75th anniversary of D-Day, the Allied invasion of German-occupied France in World War II, and the beginning of the end of Nazi rule in Europe. Well, today we're going to celebrate that anniversary with a show that's dedicated to the men and women who gave their all that day and in the 2 weeks it took to secure the beachhead and the 3 months it took to win the Battle of Normandy. For all you guys that don't really understand what all that was about, let's put it in perspective. Some of you are too young to remember, and maybe you don't even study that stuff anymore. But we suffered more men killed and wounded on D-Day and the 2 weeks following than we have in 17 years of armed conflict in Afghanistan. More in 2 weeks than in 17 years. In all, over 125,000 Americans were killed or wounded in the Normandy invasion and the three-month Battle of Normandy. My guests today are Cindy and Buddy Purcell, owners and managers of Jacksonville's Huckins Yacht Corporation. Welcome, folks. It's great to have you with us. It was Cindy's grandfather, Frank Pembroke Huckins, founder of the company, whose prototype patrol torpedo boat, or PT boat as they were known, beat all competitors and was chosen as the template for all PT boats built for the U.S. Navy during the war. You may recall President John F. Kennedy's exploits on PT-109 in the Pacific War against Japan. We're going to talk about that today, as well as the effects of World War II on Jacksonville. And if we have time, some more of the city's contributions to the war effort. In the booth today are inimitable producer and my co-host, Matt LaVey. How are you doing, young sir?
Doing awesome, Bruce. How about yourself?
Fantastic. If I got any better, it'd be you.
Oh, I'd like to hear it.
That would be nice. I think you're about 40 years my junior. And hey, guys, we do have a Facebook page. It is facebook.com/allthingsjacksradio. That's facebook.com/allthingsjacksradio. If you have a question or want to be a part of the show, feel free to give us a call at 641-1010. Or you can text us on the 1010XL text line built by Lifetime Enclosures. Again, the number for both is 641-1010. Right on 8 minutes, Matt. Isn't that incredible? All Things Jacksonville is all about Jacksonville High School athletics, and we'll feature a high school sports report every week in our opening segment sponsored by Airstream Ventures, founders of High School 912 program, which was created to help youth throughout Jacksonville by taking a holistic approach to guide high school students and athletes to reach their full potential by utilizing academics, sports, and life skills to increase the chances for success of students after graduation. Matt, what have you got for us?
Yeah, Bruce, school may be out for the summer, but there's no shortage of news in high school sports. The Major League Baseball draft took place this week. One high school player from the Jacksonville area was selected. Providence infielder Tyler Callahan was drafted in the third round by the Cincinnati Reds. That was the 85th overall pick in the draft. Callahan has agreed to a $1.5 million contract with the organization. In high school football, Mandarin quarterback Carson Beck will be featured in a Netflix documentary series. The senior will take part in QB1 Beyond the Lights. It follows his 2019 season with the Mandarin Mustangs. And a reminder, of course, Beck is committed to play football at the University of Georgia in 2020. In high school softball, Trinity head coach J.R. Borden has been named the Florida Dairy Farmers Class 4A Coach of the Year. Borden led the Conquerors to a state championship this season, and the team finished the year with a record of 20-6. So big things happening in the world of high school sports, and we'll keep you posted each and every week on the latest news. Bruce?
Thanks, Matt. Great job. Again, you do so well with that. You need to be on the sideline somewhere for the big-time program.
We'll see what happens down the road.
Hey, I think it's coming, bud. I really do. This portion of today's show is brought to you by Nimnik Chevrolet and Nimnik Buick Jeep GMC. Why buy from a franchise car dealer like Nimnik? Higher standards, that's why. Their salespeople, for example, are held to a higher standard by both dealership and the manufacturer. They're constantly tested on product knowledge and customer satisfaction. In fact, at Nimnik dealerships, the manufacturer bonus program for salespeople is based not just on the number of sales, but on how well the customer's treated. Their higher standards put you first. So before shopping the big box car store or the vehicle vending machine, consider the higher standards of a franchise dealer like Nimnik and maximize the return you get on your hard-earned automotive investment. Higher standards, we thought you'd like to know. My guests again today are Cindy and Buddy Purcell, owners and managers of Jacksonville Huckins Yacht Corporation. We'll talk to them right after this short break. You're listening to All Things Jacksonville on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We'll be right back.
You're listening to All Things Jacksonville, your city, the people, and you on 1010XL.
Welcome back, everybody, to All Things Jacksonville. This portion of All Things Jacksonville is brought to you by Safari Truck of Jacksonville. Safari specializes in the application of Linex protective coating for truck bedliners. They take great pride in their personal customer service and wide range of spray jobs. Their standard Linex spray-on bedliners are lab-tested and lifetime guaranteed to protect your truck bed from anything you can throw at it. Here's how it works. Linex permanently bonds to your truck bed with a factory-like finish that follows every angle and curve to preserve precious cargo space while creating a watertight seal. So, you'll have no air gaps, no drill holes to give water a place to hide, and rust a chance to take hold. So, protect your expensive investment with the toughest bedliner on the planet. Call Safari today and request a quote, or check them out on the web at safaritruckofjacksonville.com. My guests today are Cindy and Buddy Purcell, owners and managers of Jacksonville's Huckins Yacht Corporation of Jacksonville. I can't say that name enough. I want you two to know right up front, it would take us 10 of these shows to tell your whole story. So there's an invitation right there to come back. These guys even have a book. It's called Huckins, The Living Legacy. It was published back in the 90s. It's an absolutely beautiful book. It's like a coffee table book, but it's history. There's a lot of words in there. And it's out of print, but it's available free digitally. All you have to do is just sign up at the Huckins website. That's HuckinsYacht.com. I invite you to go look at it. It's quite fascinating. D-Day. The invasion of Nazi-held northern France in World War II would not have been possible without a small watercraft known as a Higgins boat, or as we all know it today, a landing craft. You've seen them in Saving Private Ryan. They're those big boxy things that pull up on the beach and the ramp falls and everybody either gets shot or they run up the beach. So anyhow, they were designed and built by Andrew Higgins of Higgins Industries of New Orleans, and the Supreme Allied Commander, General Dwight Eisenhower, said of the Higgins boat, "If Andrew Higgins had not designed and built those landing craft vehicle personnel, that's LCVPs, we never could have landed on an open beach. The whole strategy of the war would have been different." But Higgins also built another small boat for the Navy, this one not so successful to begin with, and that was the PT boat, or Patrol Torpedo Boat. After rigorous pre-war testing on Higgins, the Higgins PT boat, and another built by another company called Elco, the Navy decided to put mass production of the boats on hold until a satisfactory working design, quotes, could be obtained. Enter Frank Pembroke Huckins, your grandfather, Cindy, and founder of Huckins Yacht Corporation in 1928. Tell us a little bit about your granddad. We'll save the PT boat part. We'll pull that back in a few minutes, but tell us how he started the company.
Well, thank you, Bruce. He was rather a irascible individual. He built his first boat when he was 16, and he built his second boat when he was 22. All during his youth and in his earlier years, he had worked on designs, and it was his dream to build a planing yacht. Back then, small boats could plane, but large boats, like 45 feet, were displacement boats, and he designed and is credited with building the first planing hull. And that's how he got started in business. He started in Jacksonville. He was originally from Boston, moved down to Jacksonville when he was looking for Cyprus because his family was in the millwork business, and ended up staying and going into the boat business. He started this in 1928. And he built his first boat for David Goodrich. The boat was a fast...
That's like Goodrich rubber?
Like Goodrich rubber.
Okay.
It was a fast boat, over 20 knots. And from there, it's history, because the planing hull worked, and he built and sold many boats after that.
Let's talk about something else that happened when he launched that first boat. Wasn't that the day you were born?
Yes, it was. I had forgotten that, or actually, probably I didn't know that.
You ought to read your book.
Yeah, that's right. June 13th, so I have a birthday coming up.
There's a lot of neat stuff in there. Okay, the hull was actually called the quadraconic hull. Let's talk about the paradox of planing. We're going to talk about several paradoxes here. We're going to talk about the paradox of pendulum rolling. We're going to talk about the paradox of pounding, and these are things that are super, super interesting and you don't even think about unless you're involved in that subject. But the paradox of planing, let me help you out here. I'm going to do this from the layman's point of view, which is how it was explained in your book. The best illustration of planing is skipping a stone across water. Although the stone weighs more than the volume of water it displaces, it has shape and enough velocity to wedge itself on top of the water, and it planes. And here's where the boat building conundrum comes in. Unlike the skipping stone, the planing hull is not supposed to sink after the velocity is lost. So your grandfather's hull was called the quadraconic hull?
Yes, that's based on four cones, and it's similar to an airplane wing. The boat actually will climb up on top of the water at between 12 and 13 knots and ride on top. With the speed and the airflow and the water flow running under that lifts it up.
Where did the term Fairfoam Flyer come from? Was that just a better way to describe? I mean, was that just the name of the quadraconic hull?
Well, it's an excellent description. My grandfather's logo was a mermaid, and she was fair of form and a flyer, just like our boats. So that's where it came, Fairfoam Flyer.
Was that her in that picture pulling the seaweed?
I say that's my mother. Sometimes I say it's me.
There is a picture of a rather beautiful woman pulling seaweed from the river in her birthday suit in the book. So might be some.
And that's my grandfather looking over the back of the hole.
Cindy, that you actually tried to find who that lady was?
I actually did. One of our boat owners actually found out who she was. And I believe she worked for I thought originally that she worked for the company, but that was incorrect. I think she was a very good-looking debutante.
You know, another interesting little sideline since we're talking about this woman. You've heard of Rosie the Riveter, which was the iconic girl with her arm flexed and a muscle. I'm reading enough right now that it looks like she came from here. Because we actually built 28 Liberty ships right here in Jacksonville for the war effort. The Liberty ships, they built 2,000 of them. The Nazis sank about 200 of them. But she was a model and worked in one of the factories here. And that's another side story for down the road. But anyhow, I thought I'd get to that. Let's get back to the PTs. So the world of boat building is certainly very small. And your grandfather learned through that small community of the PT boat problem. So what did he do?
Well, there was a problem with PT boats because they were cracking up. They were falling apart. The speed had to be above 40 knots and go through heavy seaways. And the boats couldn't stand. They just kept coming apart. So my grandfather had a design with his quadraconic hull, and he said, hey, my boats won't fall apart, they won't pound, and they'll go over 40 knots. So I'll give the story over to Buddy because he'll describe what my grandfather did to prove that.
Let me ask you one more question. How in the world did he ever get the meeting with Admiral James Irish, the captain of the Bureau of Ships? Was he just well-connected?
No, he found out James
Irish's
name.
They didn't have Google back
name,
then.
And that's right, he Googled it. And walked into his office one day and said, hey, I was not invited to the PT boat program, but I can tell you I've got a boat that will perform. And so he convinced him.
Buddy?
In the beginning, nobody really believed in him. And the Navy finally told Frank Huckins that they wouldn't buy a boat that he could build one that they would loan him the motors that he needed for the horsepower.
So this was the $100,000 gamble?
Yes.
And in today's money, what was that, $1 million?
About four.
$4 million, okay. I'm bad at math.
By the way, we have absolutely every single drawing of the original PT boat, all the parts, pieces, designed. There are 89 drawings of the original PT boat, and we have them in our archives.
You showed those to me.
Yes.
And Matt, don't forget pictures. I'm going to post some of the pictures of those plans. I mean, when you reached down with your foot and pulled that drawer open, it was like, I got goosebumps. I mean, there it is right there. These are the designs. And I think he made $28.60 profit on that
about
first boat?
That, on the total contract.
It would have been a major loss if he had to provide the engines too, right?
Oh, God, yeah. But in this situation, he went ahead and took the gamble, built the boat. It was the only one built that was powered by four engines. The final contract for the United States Navy produced a boat that was somewhat longer than the prototype that he had, and only had three engines in it. All of this production at Huckins went on from about 1941 through 1943, and the company built 19 PT boats.
That's two squadrons, right?
In two squadrons. They also built 33 air-sea rescue boats that were about 63 feet long, used in the recovery of pilots throughout. They also built four boats, and I can't find all of the history on it, but they were probably in Normandy for the English government. These boats were 72 feet long, and the reference to them is that they look like watermelons. So for whatever boating record that is, it's in the history of our company that says we built four boats for the British, and they look like watermelons. So they were 72-foot watermelons that we delivered.
That should be easy to pick out of in the 3,000 ships that were
parked in the operation. Yeah,
there weren't a lot that looked like watermelons. Let me take you back though, buddy. Let's talk about the Plywood Derby. And please remember, all of this was pre-war. This was before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, which pulled the United States into the war. All this happened before the war. And we'll talk also about Jacksonville's lack of military presence until the war, because back when all this was going on with your grandfather and the PT boats, NAS didn't exist. Neither did Mayport. Neither did Cecil Field. So, but let's talk about the Plywood Derby.
Okay, the Plywood Derby. In 39 into 40, the government finally decided that they needed a contract, or they needed to come down to making some commitments to patrol boats. And the way that they were going to evaluate it was that the invitations were sent out to different countries, companies, and I think there were about six or seven that participated, to provide a boat. And the job was to go to New London, Connecticut, and the Navy was just going to have one giant big boat race and see how many of them stayed together. And from those that were left in the water still floating and running, they were going to come up with what they were going to do with the program. Huckins at that time, Frank Huckins, had built the boat, PT-69, as it's indicated by us, in Jacksonville. The Navy offered fuel along the way from Jacksonville to New London, Connecticut. And this was the first time that they learned about certain situations. The boat was delivered in the water. It was to leave Jacksonville to go to this race in New London. And they dispatched a car from Jacksonville to drive to Charleston Navy Yard to arrange for fuel and tell them that this boat was going to come in and that it was one of the PT boats for the trials. Well, the boat, averaging 45 knots offshore, made it to Charleston long before the car ever could make it down the highway. So they pulled into the Charleston shipyard with no papers, no identification, with a big gray boat that had a number on the side of it, with a bunch of civilians on board, and immediately the yard there arrested them. And so it was a long conversation that went back and forth until finally the Navy representative showed up in a car and said, hey, this is one and you got to give them fuel and let them go. But it started to prove the fact that these boats had a function as far as speed. And so New London was just what it was one giant boat race.
And all of these boats were captained by Navy personnel except the Huckins boat. And my grandfather was the captain on that boat, and his partner in the business was the navigator.
All right, let's cut to the chase. I hate to use a pun. after all was said and done, the Huckins boat was deemed by the Navy acceptable for immediate construction.
The only boat that was.
The only boat that was. The Elco boat, that's Electric Launch Company? or electric boat company?
The boat.
Elco,
mm-hmm.
Which manufactured most of the boats in World War II, most of the PT boats, Elco was good for future construction with changes. In other words, it had to be brought up to speed. And I tell you what, when you, we're going to talk about the Elco miracle. And what's funny is I coined that phrase while I was writing some of the stuff for the show, and then I found it in the book. It actually was called the Miracle at Elco, where they actually with a design that was almost the same as your grandfather's quadraconic hull.
Well, yes, all the boats were built on the quadraconic hull design.
But it's kind of funny how they got it, and it was the same, and all of a sudden they're...
It's the next story.
Hey,
there you go.
Our world has ego just like all the others.
And now you know the rest of the story. I don't sound a thing like the guy. You're listening to All Things Jacksonville on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We'll continue talking to these fascinating people when we come back in a minute. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to All Things Jacksonville, your city, the people, and you on 1010XL.
Welcome back, everybody, to All Things Jacksonville. This portion of today's show is brought to you by Nimnik Chevrolet and Nimnik Buick GMC. Why buy from a franchise car dealer like Nimnik? Higher standards. That's why. If you weren't listening in the first half hour, I'm going to tell you again. Their salespeople, for example, are held to a higher standard by both the dealership and the manufacturer. They're constantly tested on product knowledge and customer satisfaction. In fact, at Nimnik dealerships, the manufacturer's bonus program for salespeople is based not on how many they sell, but on how the customer's treated. The higher standards put you first. So before shopping the big box car store or the vehicle vending machine, consider the higher standards of a franchise dealer like Nimnik and maximize the return you get on your hard-earned automotive investment. Higher standards. Folks at Nimnik thought you'd like to know. Okay, we're back. We're back with Cindy and Buddy Purcell from Huckins Yacht Corporation. This is our celebration of the 75th anniversary of D-Day show. I know we're 2 days late, but that's all right. We're topping off the week with the best. We saved the best for last. And we're talking about PT boats, which the final Navy design was designed by Cindy's grandfather, Frank Pembroke Huckins, in World War II. And even though your company only built, yours was the only company that actually manufactured them that wasn't already set up for mass production.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes, correct.
I mean, you built 18 of them, which is amazing, in less than 3 years. And Higgins, which built thousands and thousands of boats, and Elco, which built almost, there were over 500 PT boats built, and I think they built almost 400 of them, were already set up for mass production. So what?
We were a tiny yacht company.
Well, but also you have to combine it's actually 19 PT boats, with the fact that they also built the 33 air sea rescue boats,
and then the four going
English
to England
boats. So he took a very small yard and brought it up. It had well over 100 employees at that time.
And the nice thing about the PT boats that were launched in our yard, all of them were christened by the foreman's wives. So that added a nice personal
touch. I saw that picture. That was really, really nice.
And my grandmother christened the first one, and then all of the rest were christened by the builder's wives.
Okay, so you built 19 boats total. I didn't mean to short you there.
That's all right.
That's all right. You're the company historian. I would expect you to call me on that.
Well, the other, we maybe go over where they were built, in that the companies had two locations, and all of this production was done on Forsyth Street, and the boats were moved from there over to the St. John's River and put in water
downtown
at that location.
All right, let's talk about a famous PT boat driver. And it's amazing how many times President John Kennedy actually touched a Huckins boat. I mean, he was the commanding officer of PT-101, which was built by Huckins, And from what I have read, he ferried several, like four or five of them, from Jacksonville
to Miami. Yes.
So, and he was also stationed briefly at NAS Jacksonville. That place must have grown exponentially once they did the land swap and started putting all the buildings together. Because that's where my father came to Jacksonville from Illinois, met my mother, was NAS Jacks. So that must have been incredible watching all that go on.
John Kennedy spent a good deal of time in our yard with the building process of the boats.
We got a caller on the line. Jim, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to say that a lot of the PT boats for World War II were built at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard, a lot of them.
That's correct.
And we used to have, my family's lineage, we were riggers and iron workers, and I worked there for 24 years. Until it shut down in 96. And during World War II, every 28 days, the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard launched a Liberty ship every 28 days. And that's where the term Rosie the Riveter actually originated, because a lot of the ladies in that tri-state area built the ships. And I actually worked across the street from the building that they built the PT boats in during World War II at the Navy Yard. And it was a proud, proud, proud heritage. We have a museum there that's absolutely unbelievable. It's the yard was built, it originated in 1802, and that's where naval aviation got its start, on the Marine Parade Grounds as you come into the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard. So it's a lot of cool stuff, and this just brings back great memories. American exceptionalism is what Mr. Higgins strikes my heart as being, because he just had it done. He didn't listen to the naysayers, and he just made it happen. And I'm just so thankful that you're sharing this show.
Thanks, Jim. And I tell you what, if you hadn't said the word proud three times in one sentence, I was going to bring it up for you, because your voice just absolutely exudes American pride. And we certainly appreciate your call, and thanks for listening to the show. And we're going to have another we're going to have more great shows just like this, that where we bring up some very, very rich history and talk about how Jacksonville was a part of that. Let's talk about where the PT boats served. They were like in every theater of the war.
Yes.
From the Mediterranean to the Pacific. Of course, they were mostly used in the Pacific, but there were actually PT boats that were involved in the Normandy invasion.
And the Hawkins PT boats were in the Pacific. And there were some that were used for training also.
Well, most of your boats, I think I read in the book, were used up in New England for training. Indication that some of them were in combat.
I have many pictures of them in combat.
After the war, most of the PT boats were burned or scrapped. And you told me in the green room before we came onto the show that a lot of them were used for bombing practice.
Right.
After the war.
They were towing targets. Because the Navy still considered an experimental program, and the cost of shipping the boats back to stateside was too great. So what they did was they scrapped the boats. They pulled the engines and any of the other hardware, weapons and any other thing of that nature off the boats, and then they towed them behind destroyers, and people were still, the Navy Air still conducted bombing practice on them. They hated the boats because they were made out of wood. And when you took all the weight out of them, they couldn't sink them. And the requirement was that they couldn't leave them. There was a percentage. I don't remember what the percentage was. But they couldn't leave it afloat. So they had to keep on bombing them until they bombed them into toothpicks.
Most of them were used for target practice, or they were burned or scrapped.
There was one left.
Weren't 10 of your boats actually sold?
Yeah.
In Hawaii? And are any of them left? Do we know if any of them are
still? There was one left through the 90s and was in Newport, Rhode Island, and was turned into a houseboat. Buddy and I saw that walking down the dock, weren't paying any attention, and then we looked and saw the Huckins cleats on the boat and then realized it was a PT boat. We talked to the owners at that time, and they didn't even know what they had.
When was this?
This was either in the late 80s or early 90s.
Oh, my gosh.
That boat.
Where was it?
It was in Newport, Rhode Island.
Okay.
It went through a hurricane, drug anchor, and was left on a beach to just dissipate. So
wow.
There are no more PT boats.
Okay.
No more Huckins.
That's a sad story. Well, let's talk about another sad story. Your grandfather in Huckins Yacht did not receive fair compensation from the Navy or the federal government for what they had done.
No, but he took it well.
You know what? He did take it well, and he wrote a letter to the U.S. government called the Shirt Memo, January 11th, 1944. And it was like, did he go to law school somewhere in there? He must have had a lot. I know I saw him standing on the deck of a boat with some, well, those guys' attorneys, because that was an extremely well-written letter.
Oh,
and if it weren't for his fertilizer humor, it would have been a document that would look good in court.
He had a good friend who was an attorney. Maybe he had something to do with it. Who knows?
But. What was that opening line? You got it open to the book in the letter as he introduces it, something about fertilizer. He says,
I'll attempt to write this letter as free from natural fertilizer as possible.
And it's like, my gosh, if it was handwritten, it must have been a dozen pages, the letter.
Well, also, he was short and sweet, got to the point, and it really is talking about just the shirt off of his back, but we are the only PT boat company that survived after the war and have continued. So we got our justice. We're 91 years old and we're still here.
Awesome. You two guys went to different schools together.
We did.
I read that. Cindy, you went to Converse, and Buddy, you went to Wofford. I actually looked at Wofford when I was looking at schools, Spartanburg, South Carolina, and that's how you met, right?
That's how we met.
We don't have enough time to really do this justice, so this is why I'm going to invite you back. But briefly, each of you, tell me how you got in the family business.
You well, get to start.
Because the family business actually moved away from you after your grandfather's.
We never expected to be in the business at all. We came back to Jacksonville, and Buddy was actually in a chemical engineering business. I was teaching school because back then, that's all, if you had a degree, that's all women could do.
And it was my favorite subject.
Yes.
Algebra.
My grandfather had a partner at the time. And when my grandfather died, his partner took over. And my father came back after the war and worked there with his partner. His partner didn't want any part of the family to be in the business, so we never thought we would be. But very fortunately, wasn't fortunate that the partner took ill, but he did take ill, and we were able to, my father, Buddy, and I were able to buy him out. So that's how we got into the business. And we definitely learned the business from the ground up.
Well, that's we were also talking about that before the show. In order to be great leaders, especially in a family business, you just about have to do that. You have to work and not just learn, but you have to work in every phase of the business. Buddy, you started off painting the bottoms of boats. Told people he was an artist.
No.
Not really. He told him he was a painter, but he said it was such suave that everybody thought he was an artist.
You may have painted pretty pictures on the bottom of boats.
Well, I was new to Jacksonville. Cindy was born and raised here. And so as I would be introduced to these people, they all had an interest in what I was doing. And that's how it all started. What do you do? I'm a painter. So they tried to elevate the position any way they could. And when you said, no, I paint boats, bottoms of boats, you just end up with this quiet lull. Everybody looks at everybody, and you just smile and keep on going.
Yeah. Well, you probably look at the bottom of a boat differently than anybody else does.
That's for sure. I probably had more paint on me than I did on the bottom of a few of the boats, too. But that was worthwhile. I spent 5 years in the trades, which is really true, because you have to know what the responsibilities are of the individuals. You also got to know how a floor works. People on the floor have their own...
The factory floor.
Yeah, have their own society, if you want to say it. They have the, you know, their own games and know how to pull strings to get things done. So you just need to know where that is and be a part of it.
You actually worked all the machines in the factory, right, Cindy?
A good deal.
How did that go over?
They let me do it as long as I didn't cut off any major parts. And my father was a master carpenter. He was excellent. Built all furniture at home on the weekends, and he was excellent. So he taught me, and I have enjoyed working in the carpentry department. We're divided up into five separate departments at Huckins: mechanical, electrical, carpentry, and paint. So when Buddy said he worked the floor, he worked all those five areas.
We're gonna take a little break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about. I want to talk about the evolution of the company, how you went from wood to the what's called the Eric's Club Sandwich. We're not going to have time to do that today. So what I want to do is just talk about the Huckins influence in the world of yachts today when we come back. You're listening to All Things Jacksonville on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Please stay tuned. We got 5 minutes left when we come back, but we'll fill that up with some rich history.
You're listening to All Things Jacksonville, your city, the people, and you on 1010XL.
Welcome back, everybody, to All Things Jacksonville. This portion of All Things Jacksonville is brought to you by Safari Truck of Jacksonville. Safari specializes in the application of Linex protective coating for truck bedliners. They take great pride in their personal customer service and wide range of spray jobs. Their standard Linex spray on bedliners are lab-tested and lifetime guaranteed to protect your truck bed from almost anything you can put it through. Here's how it works. Linex permanently bonds to your truck bed with a factory-like finish that follows every angle and curve to preserve precious cargo space while creating a watertight seal, so you'll have no air gaps or drill holes to give water place to hide and rust a chance to take hold. So protect your expensive investment with the toughest bed liner on the planet. Call Safari today and request a quote, or check them out on the web at safaritruckofjacksonville.com. My guests today are Cindy and Buddy Purcell from Huckins Yacht Corporation. We're talking about the PT boats, and I've gotten a couple of texts, and I want to clarify a couple of things. A PT boat was primarily designed, the Navy wanted that, for a fast boat that could get under the guns of warships really, really quickly and put a torpedo in the side of them. Warships can't decline their big guns low enough to get to a low-speeding craft that can sneak up on them, and the Japanese, of course, didn't have radar in the Pacific until the very end of the war, so PT boats were able to ease in and do their job. And yes, John F. Kennedy was on PT-109, but he did captain the training vessel PT-101, which was built by Huckins. So there we've clarified that. Guys, we got a couple of minutes left. Tell us about Huckins Yachts today. You've made the transition, which we'll talk about when you come back and do another show with us, from wood to what's now called, it's not fiberglass. It's
core.
Core.
Fiberglass core construction. We're the oldest core builders in the United States. We started this construction in 1975 when no one else did. It's a very light construction, and now many yacht builders are using this. This is the state of the art, and we've been in it over 35 years. Although we build conservative-looking boats, we've always been on the cutting edge. We've built boats that are for wheelchair people, boats that have elevators all the way from the flying bridge down to the engine room, very fast boats, over 40 knots, and with a small amount of horsepower, over 40 knots. We've built our first outboard boat we built in 1986. It had 40 outboards on the back, and everybody... Today, that's really, really popular. And then Buddy will tell you a little bit about the powertrain of our new boat and some of the other powertrains.
When we come back on our next show, because we're not going to have time to do that today. Ryan? I want to thank both of you for coming today. This has been absolutely awesome having you here talking about some really, really rich Jacksonville history. And seriously, the book has 8 million words in it, in addition to all the beautiful pictures, and it's a story that needs to be told. So we'll come back and we'll start with your grandfather and we'll tell the story of Huckins without the PT boats when you come back. I want to thank my sponsors, Safari Truck of Jacksonville and the Nimnick family of dealers. And I want to thank all of you for listening. Jim, thanks for calling in. Appreciate your pride in your country and what your family did in the war, your company did in the war. Happy birthday, Ethan. My grandson will be, I don't know how old he's going to be. Happy birthday, EB. Tune in next week. We're going to have Alan Verlander I can't remember the name of his company. Alan, you're going to kill me when you Airstream Ventures. Yeah, there we go. Thanks for that, Matt. Everybody have a great weekend. Drive safe. Don't text and drive. Love y'all, and we'll see you next week, same time.